field, and he dives! He's got it! Hunter Pence robbing Amarista of a hit, something no Padre has had in eight innings against Mexico.
Hello, baseball fans, and welcome to a podcast to be named later. I'm your host, Chris Mitchell, and this is going to be an exciting program today. Lots to talk about. We're going to do a little bit of a news and notes section. We've been covering the American League and the National League. We're doing recaps. I've done that with Brandon C. Williams as well as George Kurtz. I've had Lenny Melnick on the air. We've also done some general kind of topic-focused programs as well. We've had Rob Nyer on the program. We've had Eno Saris on the program. We've also had some other interesting guests as well. My little nephew has just stepped into the studio, and he drew my attention a little bit, so I got a little bit tongue-tied for a second there. But we've had some really fantastic guests on the program. Eno Saris, again, was fantastic. He talked about exit velocity when it came to batters and pitching sample sizes when it came to pitchers, and he really gets into the weeds when it comes to talking pitchers. So that was exciting. Love having Rob Nyer on the program as well. Jim Callis from MLB.com came on to talk about baseball prospects. He came on a few months ago. He's going to come on again in the coming weeks ahead. We love having him on the program. Also, Vincent Lara from Baseball America talks prospects with us. We hope to talk a lot more prospects in the coming future, but those are some of the guests we've had recently, or at least in the last month or so. And then we're hoping to have Joe Sheehan as well as Joe Posnanski from SI.com on the program in the coming weeks ahead. They've already agreed to do it. We just haven't found a day to schedule them. So that'll be great to have both of them on. I love what Joe Sheehan has to say. Very outspoken. And, of course, Joe Posnanski, to me, he just has an interesting take on things. So I've always liked his writing and always just enjoyed the perspective that he brings to the game. He's a little bit different. And that's what's great about writing these days is there are a lot of people doing a lot of different writing. But when you get that one person or those few people out there that not only write well, not only are intelligent, not only know the game, but look at things just a little bit differently, those are some guests I like to have on the program, and I'm excited to have him on in the coming weeks or months ahead. If you hear some noises in the background, that's either my dog or my nephew. Either way, they're enjoying the program, and they're joining it with you. And if they happen to intercede a little bit, then that's just the way things roll around here from time to time. See? There he goes. Today, lots on the agenda. We're going to have George Kurtz from rotoexperts.com on. And again, we're just going to talk general baseball things. Daily Fantasy Sports met on Capitol Hill today. There's some sound that's been going around the internet about what happened there. I'm going to have George Kurtz come on. He is a fantasy sports writer over at rotoexperts.com. He also has a program that he co-hosts on Sirius XM Radio. So he'll come on and talk about what happened in Daily Fantasy Sports today. And then we'll talk about some of the kind of controversial things that have been going on throughout baseball these days, or at least noteworthy or interesting. For example, Jessica Mendoza in the ESPN booth. She obviously did some games last season for ESPN. Now that Curt Schilling has talked his way out of that seat, she was announced as the full-time person to begin this season. And she's a controversial figure a little bit, not in that she is controversial, but the fact that she got that job and that now recently she's been being praised as one of the, if not the best, I believe, it was the Sporting News, if I read the headlines correctly, ranked the color analyst in baseball, and she was ranked as the number one color analyst in all of baseball right now. Now that to me is interesting, because I like having women on my program. I've had them on before. I have Jennifer Millman, who's from RotoExperts.com, on to talk football. I've had a few other women on the program. I had a woman by the name of Kate Morrison, who does work for Baseball Prospectus, on the program before to talk about minor league baseball prospects. There are women out there that know sports. They know their specific sports. They know the ins and outs of sports. So it's not like they just know the general topics of the day. They know the ins and outs and the functions of these different sports. And so there's definitely women out there that can do the job and that have the knowledge and the understanding to do these jobs. Jessica Mendoza is the number one color analyst in all of baseball in her first full-time attempt at the game. She didn't play baseball, and that's one of the things that frustrates me is when people, you know, I kind of started doing these things because of fantasy baseball, you know, fantasy sports in general. But I actually know baseball better than I know fantasy sports, I think. Anyway, I follow baseball closely, and then I adapt that to fantasy sports. But if I talk to somebody or if I debate with somebody on Twitter who knows that I'm a fantasy sports guy, whenever they're losing an argument or whenever their argument gets weak or whenever they feel frustrated because I don't agree with them, and people, that happens quite frequently, quite often, pretty quickly, whenever you get into a social media online debate, it devolves into insulting or frustration pretty quickly. You don't have a lot of extended intellectual discussions on social media, which is frustrating because I'm an argumentative, kind of an aggressive person. But I don't get offended with conversations. If people disagree with me, I don't get angry. I might get a little bit more aggressive because I'm trying to convince them of my point. So I like discussions and I like arguing out the two sides of a point. And even if we don't come to agree, that's fine. I don't mind that. Unfortunately, these days, it seems like everyone's overly sensitive and those discussions don't go very well for very long. And especially on social media. Excuse me. And one of the first things that happens when a discussion goes against the person I'm discussing, they say, look, man, you're a fantasy guy. Just go back to fantasy sports. This is baseball and you're out of your league. It just pisses me off to no end when people say that. But yet it's easy. Someone who knows fantasy says, look, man, you're fantasy. Just go back to that. I know baseball. You don't. It's absurd. It's stupid. But it happens all the time. I'm not saying that about Jessica Mendoza. The fact that she was a softball player, that therefore she doesn't know baseball. But I do wonder if there is a difference. Because since she got ranked as the number one color analyst, everyone's picking it apart. Up here in Boston, we've got some Boston people. And one of the reasons why the Boston guy, Lou Merlone, is one of the guys who's on one of the Boston radio stations up here. And he's called the governor because he was very popular. He played for the Red Sox in a limited fashion at the major league level. He had a career in the minor leagues. And he's just a guy that everyone just came to love. He was one of those utility guys, kind of like the backup quarterback in the NFL. Everybody loves the backup. They're perfect. Lou Merlone was like the backup. Everybody loved him. He was okay in very small spurts, and he was just a very likable person. So he was a likable character who then walked right into Boston media. And so he was commenting on Jessica Mendoza and the fact that she was actually getting things wrong. Now, I do want to say just a quick fact. Lou Merlone wants to be in the booth. He actually applied for the Boston Red Sox job to be in that booth, and he didn't get it. And you can tell he has some sour feelings about it. So I will say that right off the bat. He is biased. He did a podcast recently for his station, WEEI, where he discussed how he was angry that he didn't get the gig and that it bothered him. And so he is biased. But nonetheless, he talked about how Jessica Mendoza was analyzing these games, and she was looking inside. She was really trying to do a deep dive into some of these, analyzing pitches, analyzing Louis Severino's tunnel as far as his throwing motion and where his arm slot is and the ball and this tunnel that his ball comes through. And she was even misquoting pitches, calling it a four-seamer when it was a fastball or calling it a slider when it was a fastball or something like that. So she was actually making technical mistakes and people were just jumping on her for it. So I find it interesting that she's in the booth. Is she qualified? How does Sporting News rank her the best of overall? To me, that's just political correctness going way too far. But we're going to talk with George Kurtz about that nonetheless. Her in the booth, does he think she's any good? And do you think that it's fair that she gets a job if she's not really qualified? The ESPN is dedicated to getting women into the booth. And again, I don't mind that. I like the female perspective. I love a female voice on radio or television. I really think it brings something. Their voices are obviously different than men, but also their perspectives are. And as long as they know what they're doing, as long as they're qualified, I like it. Again, I like having women on this program. So we're going to talk about Jessica Mendoza, George's opinion, since I basically gave you mine. We'll also talk about Mike Trout. Someone threw it out recently, and this is sort of a fantasy sports kind of discussion that is being played out in the media, the baseball circles, non-fantasy, which is, do you trade Mike Trout? In fantasy, you do that all the time. If you're in a dynasty or a keeper league, if your team stinks, you trade your best players in order to get younger players, and you hope that you're getting $2 for the price of one, but you're taking on some risk because you're getting younger players. And that's what is going on, at least with this discussion when it comes to Mike Trout. Should the Angels in that big contract trade Mike Trout in exchange for getting younger? And it's an interesting question because at the end of the day, if you're going to make a trade for someone younger, you want them to be Mike Trout. So you're getting rid of something, hoping that the players you get back become what you're getting rid of. So, you know, it's like a bird in the hand. So it's an interesting discussion. Fantasy sports happens all the time. But in baseball, you see it a lot, but you usually see it because a team is going to lose a player. You know, CeCe Sabathia way back when had to be traded from the Twins was CeCe Sabathia originally a Twin? I believe he was. No, an Indian. I'm sorry. Brain freeze there. The Indians weren't going to be able to re-sign CC Sabathia, so they traded him. And they didn't get much in return. But that happens all the time. You see the Rays routinely, David Price, just one of many, being traded because they're not going to be able to retain these players, so they have to trade them. Those are financial risks, and because players are becoming free agents, the Red Sox traded John Lester. I mean, so even a big market team does this sometimes. But Mike Trout isn't going to be a free agent anytime soon. He's got a contract through 2020, if, I think even longer, if he doesn't opt out. So the Angels don't need to trade him for any reason other than they have a big contract and a fantastic player, and they're not going to win anytime soon. And they just lost. Tim Heaney has an injury who could – I mean, Andrew Heaney has an injury that could be out for quite some time. And then also they lost Garrett Richards to Tommy John surgery. So who knows what his career is going to be like, but it's going to be 18 months away before he's even throwing in Major League Baseball again. So not only did the Angels need pitching to begin with, but now they lost their best guy on top of that. So this is a team that's not very good. They don't have a very good minor league system, and now they're just getting worse and worse by the day due to injury. So should they trade Mike Trout for a boatload of talent, and then if they do it properly, turn that boatload of talent into more talent than what Mike Trout provides? That's the goal. You don't see that a lot in Major League Baseball without financial terms coming into at least part of the equation. So we're going to talk about that. Should Mike Trout be traded, and does it make sense for the Angels to do that now? We'll also talk about Steven Strasburg and his extension. Signed 7 years, $175 million. Like all the big-time free agents, of course, he's got an opt-out or two in there somewhere. We'll talk about all of those details as well. I want to get into it with George Kurtz when it comes to Steven Strasburg because he's a Boris client, and that makes it even more surprising. This year's free agent market was not loaded with top-tier pitchers. Last year's market was loaded not only with top-tier guys, but just with a lot of viable options. So last year was not the best of years to be a pitching free agent. And yet David Price cashed in for $210 million. Zach Greinke cashed in for slightly less than that, but also fewer years. So you could argue that Greinke got more than Price. But either way, they both got a boatload of cash. Jordan Zimmerman got a nice piece of change to go to Detroit. And a lot of guys earned a lot of money this offseason in a crowded field. So imagine what Strasburg may have possibly been able to get if he went out there in a relatively shallow one. As a Boris client, everybody thought they knew that he was going to sign elsewhere, or at least hit the market and force the Washington Nationals to pay not only a big time money, but top market dollar money in order to keep him. And I don't know if people thought he would, to be fully honest with you. I think the Nationals need it, and you see what the Nationals are doing, and you see how well Steven Strasburg has pitched over the last little more than a half a season now. He's been one of, if not the best pitcher in baseball. Jake Arrieta has been the best over the last half year or so. Clayton Kershaw is close, and then Steven Strasburg is right there along with them. And I don't know if people realize that. The beginning of last season, Strasburg really struggled. They're blaming it on injuries. But in the second half, when he was quote-unquote supposedly healthy, he was right up there. Brian Kinney did a piece on this yesterday after the extension was announced, and he said he was the second-best pitcher in baseball to Kershaw over the last year and a quarter. I didn't look that closely into the numbers to be able to discuss that. But the fact is he's been really, really good since coming back from the disabled list last year. I think he quoted 120 strikeouts and 150 strikeouts and 20 walks in like 170 innings or something ludicrous like that. His strikeout-to-walk rate was insane. So we'll talk about that as well with George Kurtz. And if we have time, we'll talk about the Chicago White Sox. I don't think all that many people are stunned by the Cubs being dominant. I think everyone knew the Cubs would be good. I wanted to argue, when we were doing our team-by-team breakdowns and looking at the leagues as a preview to the season, I thought that the Mets would regress. I still believe that they will, even though they're playing pretty well right now. They're 20-12, and they're in first place by half a game in the NL East. I still think they're going to regress. I don't think the Mets are going to get to 90-plus wins, and I don't know if they're going to get to a wild card. I think it's going to be out of the Mets' hands if they get the wild card, to be honest. I think it's going to be depending on how the Cardinals and the Pirates and all those teams play. If those teams play as well as they can, I think the Mets miss the playoffs. But if those guys fall back a little bit, even though I think the Mets will have a worse season, a little bit worse, they may still get in. But anyway, you look at the White Sox now. I wanted to argue against the Cubs, and I couldn't. I argued against the Mets. I argued against the other Houston. But I couldn't come up with an intelligent, cogent argument as to why the Cubs weren't going to be a great team this year. And they have. They've been great. So not only did it look like they were going to be, but right now they're showing that they are. So you can't argue against the Cubs, but I'm not so sure anyone thought the White Sox were going to be legit. They're 23-11, guys. They've got a 5-game lead ahead of Cleveland. They've got 3 in the loss column and 7 in the win column right now. The White Sox are just phenomenal. The pitching staff is the best in the American League. They're also scoring runs. They traded for Todd Frazier in the offseason. I thought that was a steal of a deal. So the White Sox did a lot of good things over the last 2 seasons. Didn't work out last year, but it looks like now they made all those changes last season. I think a lot of times that happens where you make a lot of changes in that first season, it just doesn't quite mix. It doesn't jive. The chemistry or whatever it may be just doesn't quite pan out. Then the following season, all those good moves that made a lot of sense and filled your holes and made you a good all-around team, all of a sudden things start to click, and there you go. It looks like that's going on with the White Sox this year. So while the expectations were lower, they didn't get the kind of buzz and the hype and the praise that maybe they deserved in the preseason. Right now, they look like they're for real. But maybe they're not. I don't know. They just designated one of their pitchers for assignment. They've got a lot of lefties in that rotation, some young guys in there. So maybe there are reasons to be not as optimistic as I'm talking about them right now. So I'll get that those opinions from George Kurtz as well. Let's bring him into the program. He writes for RotoExperts.com as well as hosting programs over at SiriusXM Radio. If you want to follow him on Twitter, it's at George Kurtz. George, thanks for coming on today. I know you have children. I got to say, I'm taking care of my sister's children, at least parts of the days recently. I'm worn out. I'm loaded up on caffeine right now. You can probably tell. I don't know how you guys get up early or stay up super late. Taking care of kids all the time is just killing me. So congratulations to you for managing it. But thanks for coming on and finding a few minutes for us, even though you have all those kids over there wearing you down, because I can't wait to take a nap.
Well, I guess that depends on the age of your kids. My kids are in grade school, so they're not home during the day. And even then, when they're out at night, you know, they go outside and play with their friends. It's not as bad as some people think. Just kind of be disciplined with your kids, that's all. And allow me to watch some day baseball today.
You just have to be disciplined with them. It's easier to say that than to do that. And I've figured that out pretty quickly. I've been helping out my sister. She lost her husband recently, so we've been trying to do our best to help her out with the kids and everything like that. And so I've come to realize what taking care of kids are, and rather than just being there for the happy times, I'm there for some of the discipline and feeding them and getting them off to school and all these different things. Telling people to discipline their kids and actually going through with it regularly, it's easy to say it. It is not that easy to do it. I can attest to that now better than ever before, without any doubt.
Like I said, kids, they're a handful. Obviously, they're a handful. When I say discipline, I don't mean I'm breaking out a rule or anything. You just got to be consistent. No does mean no. Don't give in. You know, kids will push your boundaries, and it's also much easier for a parent to discipline than an uncle or an aunt. I'm an uncle and an aunt. I'm an uncle as well, and it is different. To put it nicely.
Yeah, I love being the nice uncle that they're all happy to see. I give them the candy and the cookies when they're not supposed to have it. I let them watch the YouTube that they shouldn't be watching, or the television show that's a little bit older than they should be watching. I let them stay up a little longer. That's the easy, fun thing to be, the uncle. The no, you can't have those cookies, or you have to have time out because you ate more cookies than you're supposed to. Those things are a lot tougher, and somehow, for some reason, they don't love me quite as much in those moments.
Yeah, go figure. I think I'm more of the I'm probably a lot like you. You know, it's pretty much, listen, if you're not burning the house down, do what you want to do. No noise, be quiet, let me do my things. You know, leave the house in one piece, and don't let your mother find out.
Yeah, that is the thing. Whenever there's a tough question, it's like, go ask your mother first. I'm hoping she'll say no so that I don't have to. And then when I do give in, I say that exact same thing. Don't tell your mother you had 6 cookies. Tell her you had 3. Or tell her you didn't have that slushy or that ice cream. You were supposed to eat your vegetables. They're great, to be honest. I love my sister's kids, but getting up at 6:45 this morning was not my idea. I'm a night person. I'm awake at 6:45 in the morning sometimes because I haven't gone to bed yet. Waking up at 6:45 after writing until 3, that's not really my thing, but it was today. I'm loaded up on sugary, caffeinated goods, and we'll get through the program somehow. And let's start by getting into what's going on in baseball right now. And since you're the daily, since you're a fantasy sports guy, let's start with that topic. There's a lot of interesting topics I want to get into today, but let's start with that. I wrote an article for Baseball America recently with J.J. Cooper about daily fantasy sports. Anyone that would like to read it, head on over to baseballamerica.com, or you can head on to my Twitter feed. I can post anybody's a link to it if you'd like to read it. And we went over this, and this was a few months ago. This was during the winter. And now we've had some developments, and specifically they were on Capitol Hill today. Just give people an update. What's going on right now? What happened today?
Well, yeah, you heard on Capitol Hill they're holding hearings, you know, about whether or not DFS is gambling. That's pretty much what the gist of it is, whether or not DFS is gambling. It is not new news. Other than the fact they're holding hearings, we know what the hearings are going to be about. But what's strange is they didn't invite DraftKings to speak there, FanDuel to speak there. Jerry Jones isn't there. Robert Kraft isn't there. These guys have stakes in these businesses. So in some ways, I think that's what they're raising alarms here, where they're sort of have they already made their decision for even having hearings since you're not hearing from the other side? Yeah, I think that's what's the alarm bell is going there. Lou Mayone, who's our boss, head of the Fantasy Sports Network, the CEO, he was on the Fox News. He was the one who was explaining the situation there. And, you know, it's a tough – listen, I get it. I do get it that the business probably should be regulated. But I think my other thing is this really what our politicians have to be talking about? Don't we have other problems? Are there other major issues to worry about than whether or not fantasy is gambling? Which I don't believe it is. You know, once their skill is, more skill than luck. You know, just come in there and pick out nine players and win a prize. You need to do your research. I do much more homework in general for daily than I have to do for yearly. Yeah, so I don't get it. I don't know. To me, this has always been about politicians wanting to make a name for themselves. You know, because what else do you do? You know, if people don't know you, oh, go to Daily Fantasy. That'll get picked up in the news. All of a sudden, your name will be mentioned everywhere. That's to me what this is. I don't think it's in the overall landscape. I mean, come on. We have many more things in this country to worry about than Daily Fantasy.
And ESPN did an Outside the Lines program yesterday talking about half of the program was for Daily Fantasy Sports, and then the other half was gambling and sports in general, which it really does do a disservice. Frontline did a piece with PBS, and I guess in partnership with, I think it was the New York Times or one of the, I think it was one of the New York, I think it was the New York Times, and they did, and somehow the Daily Fantasy Sports argument was not only partnered up with the gambling discussion, but they were interwoven together, and it made a connection that really wasn't fair or accurate. I don't know what should be considered gambling and what shouldn't be. I mean, when they say that poker is gambling, I don't understand that. And I do think there's a difference between Daily Fantasy Sports, poker, and blackjack, even though there is, to some degree, gambling in blackjack. And then you've got the games where you spin the wheel or you got craps. And I don't know. I don't know what is considered legally gambling. And that's kind of part of the issue is they're trying to define what gambling is for legislative purposes. And everyone assumes Daily Fantasy Sports is gambling, and yet technically, by legislative description, maybe it's not. I don't know. To me, that's part of it. But what happened in ESPN Outside the Lines yesterday, they suggested that those people didn't want to show up. Not that they weren't invited, that they chose not to. That's what kind of the lawyer on talking. There was a guy in studio. I think his name was Wallach. There was another lawyer guy on from outside. He was offsite. And then Daily Fantasy Sports guy, Bach, was on there. And he obviously talked about the Daily Fantasy Sports stuff, but they intimated, the lawyer guy that was on, or the reporter that was in studio, intimated that they didn't want to be there because they didn't want to be connected to the gambling discussion at all. So what you're saying is they weren't invited? It wasn't that they chose not to go, but they actually were not even invited to be there? Is it? Because that seems like a difference and kind of a meaningful one. Excluding them versus them not wanting to be there clearly seems to imply a very strategic reasoning behind the two. That seems meaningful, and yet I'm not sure which it was.
Well, you know, I think this could go down to a PR thing, because you're probably right. Maybe they were invited and just declined for whatever reason. Yeah, just kind of involved that everybody declined. Maybe they knew it was going to be they were going to be roasted, you know, so they're setting themselves up. Who knows? You know, I think PR will take care of that. Oh, you weren't invited. Oh, yes, you were. Whatever. The bottom line stays the bottom line. Like I said, why are they so after Daily Fantasy? I know you're right. I mean, every state defines gambling differently, you know, so that makes it strange. You know, I think for most people, gambling is when it's just luck. You know, there's no skill involved. You know, when you have a point spread, you know, Yankees are playing KT tonight, so if the Yankees are favored, you know, by a run on the hockey game, you know, you're minus a goal. Oh, you're just picking one side or the other. That's gambling. You're getting a goal or losing a goal, whatever it is. That's gambling. I get it. How are you gambling in daily fantasy? Is there luck involved? Of course there's luck. There's luck involved in everything. In professional baseball, there's luck involved. You may lose a game because a ball that's going right to the infield that hits the lip of the grass and goes underneath his glove. Hits a cleat mark and bounces over his head. That's luck. No skill there. That's because it's gambling. You know, so that's what bothers me here. There is skill involved. I know how much work I have to put in to make a daily lineup. I'm not just picking players out of a hat. I'm not supposed to go looking at one thing going, okay, I'm just going to take all these guys on the Yankees tonight, all these guys in Boston tonight. I'm not doing that. There's more work to be put in. So that's where I think it bothers me a little bit. I'm one who also, I don't play poker. It's pure gambling. Once again, I play the game. I know there's skill involved. You know, sometimes you're not even playing your cards. You're playing the other person. Getting them to drop a better hand. That skill at blackjack to me is probably closer to gambling because you're pretty much told what to do. You know, if you have less than seven, the dealer has a picture card showing, you have 10 showing, you just keep hitting until you get above 17. If he doesn't have a picture card showing or it's less than seven, well, then you're going to stick. And so he's going to bluff. That's just the way the game's played. You know, so, listen, a lot of it to me comes down to this. It's a lot of aspects of life. I want less government intrusion, not more. You know, I don't think this is one of the important issues. And this has nothing to do with me being a fantasy guy, a daily guy, a yearly guy, whatever it is in fantasy sports. I just think the government has better things to worry about than fantasy sports. Who is fantasy sports hurting? All right? I mean, who is it hurting? We all play, we enjoy it. I just don't think they have other things to worry about. You know, getting people jobs in the country, other things are going on overseas. Yet we have our politicians worried about who's making a lineup tonight for Major League Baseball.
Yeah, and one thing that I really came across is one of the gists of my article from Baseball America was, A, what they're discussing and I think most people agree that legislating it is fine as long as they're reasonable and not too intrusive and not too prohibitive. Like, for example, some states want to force them to pay essentially a tax to just get entered, to get licensed. And they want to make that an extremely expensive tax, and therefore daily fantasy sports won't be legal in those states, because they won't be able to get licensed because they're like Nevada wants to charge them an enormous gaming license fee in order to play there, as if they were a casino, which a casino can raise hundreds and hundreds of millions or billions of dollars because they have people go there for vacations and buy hotel rooms and there's so much more to going to Vegas and being at a casino than just playing the slots or playing blackjack. Daily fantasy sports is purely just a gaming situation. So to charge them the same tax as a casino is basically, without those additional revenue streams, is just ridiculous. So those kinds of legislations will kill it. But I don't have a problem with states determining what legislation is needed, age limits, for example, and things like that. But one of the gists that I got from my research and from doing the article is that this is going to be decided at the state level. So while the federal government can talk about this all they want, and like you said, why this is kind of why I'm on board with you on this when it comes to the federal level. At the state level, I do think this needs to be legislated to some degree, and doing that in a reasonable way is important because this is a business industry. Just like you would legislate oil or farming or any industry, the mortgage industry that almost sank this entire country. The reason why that happened is because George Bush basically eliminated all of the legislation when it came to mortgages. So mortgage companies were able to just run free and give mortgages to anybody that they could possibly be interested in giving it to. And a lot of these people could not qualify normally and ended up going bankrupt and being foreclosed on. And that was a significant portion of why the mortgage crisis happened. Now, there are lots of other things to it because they turned these mortgages that were supposed to be these really safe bets when they really weren't, they turned them into financial instruments that they basically traded as stocks. So they turned a relatively stable industry that was credited with being stable and was considered very, very extremely safe. It turns out that they changed the industry and it wasn't safe at all. And then they sold that safeness for the top dollar price as a stock on the market and just made tons of money. And then they made money on the back end and there was so much. But the point being, they totally delegislated the mortgage industry and it became so enormous worldwide that it almost sank the world's global economy. Now, most de-legislation doesn't get to that degree, but legislation in a responsible manner is good and necessary to protect consumers, and I don't have a problem with that at the state level. But that's the thing. Why is Congress spending all this time having these discussions when the one thing that I came away with from doing my article is that this is going to be decided at the state level. The government can make recommendations, and what made DFS legal to begin with was a piece of legislation created by the federal government. That gave them that niche that said that fantasy sports was a game of skill rather than gambling. So that allowed daily fantasy sports to come about as an industry. But this is going to be decided at the state level. So these federal hearings are, I think, mostly for show. That they can pass whatever they want to, but the states don't have to follow it. So the states are going to decide this issue. And to me, that's part of what's going on. But just to wrap it up real quickly before we move on to some of our other topics, did anything come out today that was noteworthy, or was it purely just people talking back and forth and it was clearly just a PR event? Or did something come about of it today that you think was noteworthy and maybe something that should be discussed and could be swaying the tide either way, good or bad, for either industry?
No, I don't think anything noteworthy came out. I think, like you said, it was more everybody talking, yapping about it, and now it'll be in the news again. That's pretty much all I think really happened tonight. No team that's involved. That's like, oh my God, this side's going to win, or that side's going to win. And, to reiterate your point, I agree with you. I think the game does need to be regulated somewhat. You know, it's protection for people. But like I said, I just don't want to see – I just want government telling us what we can do and what we can't do. You know, it's different when it's something that's obviously bad for you or, you know, illegal or, it could hurt your health or hurt somebody else. To me, this is a game of skill. You know, if you want to play, great. If you don't.
Yeah. I agree. Again, to some degree, I do think you need some legislation, but this has become a big issue, and it's a big industry, and I think most people believe that it's going to pass. And unfortunately, it's going to take a while to do it, which is how legislation really works. I'm Chris Mitchell. This is a podcast to be named later. We're talking with George Kurtz from SiriusXM Radio, as well as RotoExperts.com. If you want to follow him on Twitter, it's at George Kurtz. If you'd like to follow me, I'm tweeting out during the program little quotes, little updates on what's coming up as far as topics go. You can follow me on Twitter at CJMitch73. If you'd like to get in discussions with us on Facebook, we have a long form to do that. We have a page. It's a podcast to be named later. Just ask to join in there, and you can get into the discussion, talk about baseball, make suggestions for the program if you'd like. So head on over there to Facebook and do that. If you want to follow the podcast, you can do that. It's blogtalkradio.com/BoscoNation. Head on over to blogtalkradio.com/BoscoNation, and you will get alerts to when the program airs. And it also is posted on minorleagueball.com, where I post some of my writings as well as all of the podcasts. So if you want to go check out some of our previous podcasts, head on over to minorleagueball.com and scroll through, and you'll find me on there. I think it's under CJ Mitch, but you can scroll through all the different articles and postings, and you'll find my podcasts in there. Again, we had Rob Nyer, we've had Jim Callis, we've had Eno Saris, Vince Lara. Lots of fantastic guests on there and some interesting conversations. So head on over to minorleagueball.com for that. But George, let's move on to the next topic, and that's Jessica Mendoza from ESPN. As I said in my intro, I like having a female on the show. As long as they know what they're doing, as long as they're knowledgeable, I don't like just like having a sexy voice or a female voice just for the sake of having it or because they're a figurehead. I want someone who's qualified, who knows what they're talking about. But as long as they are, and there are plenty of women out there that do, that I don't think people should automatically assume that a woman doesn't know sports. There are plenty of women that know plenty about sports. And so if you're looking for someone who is qualified, you're going to be able to find them. So to me, that's not even an issue. The question of whether women are capable of talking sports, to me, isn't even an issue. There are plenty of them that are. I like it. I think they bring a little bit of a different perspective. I like the female voice. We are in a verbal medium right now in radio. If you have a crappy voice or you stutter or you speak improperly, you're not good for radio, and you're also not that great for television. Of course, appearance plays a huge role in television, but on radio, women's voices just are a little bit different, but they also have a little bit of a different perspective on things, and I like that. So whenever I can find a woman to bring on to the show, I like it. I think it brings something. So I am all on board with women having jobs in the booth as long as they're qualified. Now, I believe it was a Sporting News who did a recent report of a ranking system, ranking all the top color people in baseball. And if I'm reading the headlines and the hype recently correctly, she was ranked the number one color analyst in sports. Now, people have picked apart. Now, because she's been noticed, now the first female person in a booth, it's not like she's doing Kansas City Royals games or San Diego Padres games or Seattle Mariners games up in the Pacific Northwest. she's not only in a major market, she's on maybe the major network of all of sports. And she's in the booth on their premier highlight game of the week. So she's not just starting as a controversial person in a controversial job in a small market. She's doing it at the top of the mountain. So she's being put in a tough spot. But for the sporting news to come out and say that she is the best, that to me is not only PR, that's not only PC, but that's just outright stupid. To me, she's going to be scrutinized a lot. So when I see people criticizing her for making mistakes, calling a slider a fastball or calling it, I think it was Stephen Wright threw a fastball when it was a knuckleball, or when she talked about Leo Severino's tunnel and all these things, people are picking her apart for those being mistakes. And I don't know if she's making a ton of mistakes. I don't watch every single game. I don't listen to every single minute of all of those broadcasts. The Red Sox have been on 3 weeks in a row, so I've been seeing her more recently than normal. But she's really being picked apart now because she's been put on this spot and the highlights are there and she's like a criminal trying to break out of prison. The light has just zoomed in on her and we're all picking her apart for every teeny little flaw. So maybe she is getting a little bit more criticism than she deserves. But at the same time, for the sporting news to go all the way the other direction and say she's the best color person in all of sports, to me that's a little bit absurd. What are your thoughts about Jessica Mendoza in general and the idea that the sporting news thinks she's the best and that other people are saying that she doesn't know what she's talking about?
All right, so I guess a lot of questions there about Jessica Mendoza. Now, you mentioned the obviously came on board last year, replaced Schilling when he mouthed off last year, and then replaced him permanently over the offseason. I actually seen him or watched him more on Baseball Tonight than I do the game cast. By the way, there's a front of me, and I don't care. I don't need an announcer to tell me what's going on. I can see. You know, so I don't need her to tell me. I'm barely listening to any announcers. You know, there are some that I do like. You know, the Mets have some good announcers. Gary Thorne's good. Obviously, Vin Scully is the best in the game. Both guys I'll listen to. But most of them are, you know, just talking heads. You know, they have some good things to say, some bad things to say. People pick me on her because she makes a mistake. Every announcer makes a mistake. Okay? Every announcer saying, you know, a fastball instead of a slider. You know, calling a changeup, but whatever. They all do that. It's just, it's human. You're going to make some mistakes here. Remember, they're not watching the game on TV. They're watching up top. So it can be difficult to tell a slider from a fastball sometimes. Can you tell what's sitting about slider and it's fastball? The slider is 91 miles an hour. So up there, it's a lip fast. So that doesn't bother me at all. Once again, your argument could be, she didn't play the game. Yeah, she didn't play softball, professional softball, great, but didn't play baseball. But there are plenty of other announcers who are the same thing, never played the game. So, like I said, bottom line to me is I don't care. You know, she seems like she knows what she's talking about. I don't mind listening to her. Do I agree with everything she says? No. But then again, I don't agree with anything anybody says. You know, there's always going to be a disagreement that I think they're wrong for whatever reason. That's why it's a great country. We're allowed to be able to think things like that. You know, but I don't feel anything great. Oh, I can't listen to her. You know, I don't care if she's female. I don't care if she's male. She can be a talking dog up there. As long as she seems to know what she's talking about, what she's pleasant to listen to, I'll listen. But like, for me personally, Chris, when it comes to announcers on game telecasts, like I said, it'll be on, but generally I'll have some music in the background as well because most of them, in my mind, talk too much. I think there needs to be less talking during the game, not more. You know, I think they all want to talk. They all want to get airtime, so they talk too much. You know, and they say so many things that I just don't care about. You know, there's three people in the booth. It's just too much for me. Yeah, I don't need every second to be filled up with talk. So I said she doesn't bother me in the least. But like I said from my experience with Jessica is more on Baseball Tonight and her analysis. That's what I care about. Yeah, that's what's important to me to see what's going on around the league. I don't really have a major issue with her. As far as sporting news making her top 10, this smells like clickbait. You know, 'cause they want you to click on the article, so they say this. She's not number one. That's silly. I mean, and it's nothing against Jessica. She may be top 10, but she's not number one. That's just silly. That's an organization that wants, you know, either the writer of the article is in love with Jessica or they want clicks. Let's make something controversial. We see this all the time. They make controversial headlines, people will click on it and read the article. Yeah, that's just a media ploy. So, no, she's not number one. I don't have an issue with it. I certainly don't think she's the worst, but she's not the best either.
And I know your watching/listening habits, and like you mentioned, you don't even usually listen to the shows or to the games. You usually listen to music and have it on mute. which is how I watch Fox News. I have it on the background and I have it on mute, and that's maybe not a fair fair way to discuss news. But when you look at what's on the Fox television station and you listen to the garbage that they say, there's a lot of reason to watch it. There's not a lot of reason to listen to it. But that's a different story when it comes to these broadcasts. Let me ask you about that, because you don't really listen to sports when you're watching it. What makes a good what makes a good broadcaster, in your opinion? Is there a broadcaster? I mean, everyone talks about how Vince Scully is the best and there's nobody close. I know Doc Emmerich for hockey. He's phenomenal when it comes to hockey. I can see why you may not want to listen to a hockey guy, because hockey is extremely difficult. And yet Doc Emmerich is just phenomenally good. I truly believe he can make a really bad hockey game really good just because he's so good. There aren't a lot of broadcasters that can do that, but there are a few. What makes for a good broadcast for you? And because you're such a tough grader, let's put it, is there a broadcaster that in any sport that if they're doing the game, you'll actually turn off your music and listen to the broadcaster? Does anyone actually do that for you? Because I know you're pretty strict in your demands. And like you said, you'd rather listen to music than listen to someone break down tape while watching the game there.
Well, I don't have it on mute. That's incorrect. It's low. I can hear it, you know. But the thing is, I've been watching baseball for 40 years. There's very little bit of the other tell me that I don't already know. You know, I don't need to hear the stories they sometimes tell, or the meaningless chat, you know, that I just don't care about. Vince Scully, the way he pitches, you know, the way he paints the game is different. I like listening to him. You know, I like more of the old time. Mel Allen, you know, back in the day was fantastic. You know, I enjoyed more listening to him. I reckon Gary Thorne, Doc Emmerich, he's fantastic. Gary Thorne, very good. He's someone I can listen to. I'm a Yankee fan, but the Mets broadcasters are good. You know, they're definitely better than the Yankee broadcasters. You know, so I enjoy listening to that. Back Tony Kubek, Jim Cott, old-timers. I think the old-timers were better. Guys back in the, you know, 80s, 90s, and before that 70s. They're better at describing the game. You know, I don't like the fact that it seems like everybody believes they must have an ex-athlete in there. Not every ex-athlete can talk, or, you know, could say what they need to say on air. So sometimes that bothers me. But in the end, it comes down to when I'm watching a game, there's very little you can tell me. What are you going to tell me? I can see it. You know, I know the game more than well enough. I don't need you to tell me what's going on. I got it. You know, well, generally what I'm looking for is some inside information that maybe, you know, they talked to this player today, and he's banged up and he doesn't think he can play, or, you know, something happened during the game, and then I want their opinion on it. That's what I'm looking for. As far as the, you know, play-by-play, no, I can see that for myself. You know, there are some, when it comes to the games, you know, I don't know why the YES Network, you know, as a Yankee fan, doesn't have the K-Zone. I really wish they would have that. You know, that's something I might be interested in. Their opinions on, you know, if there's an umpire strike zone, wide, small, off, down, whatever it is. That's something I'm interested in. Stuff like that. Like the play-by-play, it's not meaningless, but I just don't need that. I got it. You know, when they say something I do need to hear or I'm interested in, I'll turn the radio off.
Yeah, I like the more reasonable and rational people. I actually like Michael Kay. I don't know about what people think in New York, but when I drive through New York, I like to listen to Michael Kay on his radio show. And when the Yankees are on TV somewhere and he's doing the broadcast, I actually think he makes the broadcast better. I hate Sterling. He drives me crazy. And I mostly don't like those kind. I mean, Boston has a little bit of a history of guys like that. Johnny Most was beloved here in Boston. I could see why everywhere else you would just despise him. I mean, you look at Heinsohn up here doing the Celtics now, as biased as you're going to find. And if you're biased in agreeing with him, then maybe that makes you enjoy the broadcast better. But in general, I like the more reasonable people that talk rationally, that talk intelligently rather than in a biased kind of advocacy way. But some people love those things. I mean, Harry Carey, I don't know if he was biased or not. That was a little bit before my time, but he was definitely interesting in the way he did his job. Maybe he's a one-off. Maybe he's one of those guys that's an outlier. I don't know if he was overly biased, though I suspect he was. But maybe he was so colorful that people loved him for that. But you look at I'm horrible with names. The guy up in Hawk Harrelson up with the Chicago White Sox, he's gone. Maybe I can understand why. Maybe White Sox people like him for that and they get used to it. But that to me, I hate that kind of stuff. So it drives me crazy. We have a guy up here in Boston who does the Bruins games, who I can accept it, again, because I'm a Bruins guy. He gets animated. He gets excited about it. But, again, I'm not a huge fan of the guys that go crazy like that. Do you like that at all? Or do you like it sometimes? I don't know. Do you like Sterling for the Yankees? Because to me, I hate him and the woman. What's her name? Again, I'm horrible with. Yeah, I can't stand that pair. If they're ever on for some reason, or even if I see some highlights or something, I just seeing them. You know, sometimes you'll see a highlight of a Yankee play, and of course they're doing the play by play while it's happening. Even 8 seconds of those two drives me nuts. I cannot stand them. We've had that up here as well. Do you like that at all? Are you a fan of that at all? Or is that does that irk you like it eats at me?
The quickest way for me to turn off your broadcast is if you're a homer. Then I shouldn't say I have no respect for you, but you're not going to tell me anything now because everything's colored. You know, and you see it, it's rose-colored glasses, you're slanting everything towards the home team or team you work for. I think that's a major problem. You know, and I understand that. These guys hired you, so you got to slant everything that way because you want to keep your job. I get it. You know, if the Yankees hired me, maybe I would be critical of them either. But as far as your journalistic approach, you lose all credibility. You know, I no longer can take anything you say seriously. You know, you're not going to help me in my job at all now. You know, so that's like I said. I hook out, it's fun. You know, listen to him, it's fun. Put it on the board, yes. You know, all that stuff. You know, he don't, and all that, but he's a big-time homer. You know, no doubt he's a homer. Yeah, but he admits it. You know, I mean, I don't want to tell us, yeah, Butch Goring, former player. Why is former player is so difficult? You know, he admits it. Okay, maybe I'm not saying it because I'm an Islander guy. Oh, then I can't respect anything you have to say then. Because you have to say what you think. You're thinking of towards the Islanders, and that bothers me. You know, I like to think, that I have an unbiased opinion. I'll criticize the Yankees as well as I'll criticize anybody else. You know, if I see something I don't like, I have no problem saying it. You know, so I think that bothers me a little bit. And you hear about this all the time. You know, you wonder why something like that's why broadcasters get fired because they're critical of their team. And now they're afraid to do it because they don't want to get fired. So, yes, that bothers me. As far as Susan Wilson and John Staley are concerned, I used to love listening to the games on the radio. You know, you go out in the yard, put it on the radio, whatever. Let's just say I no longer do.
Yeah, I don't mind if someone has a catchphrase. I do hate it when they're overly homer, as you put it. If they have a catchphrase, like, he's gone, that to me is annoying. But if someone has something like that way of doing things, I don't have a problem with that if it's a good one. But, yeah, I agree. I can't stand the homer stuff. The Red Sox had one a little bit different up here. They had Don Orsillo and Jerry Remy working together for a long time. They just recently let Orsillo go and replaced him with Dave O'Brien. Very different guys. Their voices are kind of similar. O'Brien's got one of the best probably TV or radio voices maybe in the country. Now, is he one of the best broadcasters? I would maybe he is, because ESPN has been using him for quite some time. He's a well-respected broadcaster. So maybe in every sense of the term, Dave O'Brien's one of the better guys going. Maybe that's the case. But again, everyone has their own flavor, what they like and don't like. But Don Orsillo took over for Sean McDonough. Don Orsillo was very plain, very ordinary, very straightforward, not a lot of personality. Whereas Sean McDonough was very snarky, very, very controversial. He had no problem criticizing the Red Sox or whoever. He was very sarcastic. He would make these sarcastic kind of wry jokes about things. And I like that. To me, I mean, maybe that's me. I picture myself being a wry, sarcastic, code word for jerk. I think some people could look at Sean McDonough, who was just recently announced as the ESPN guy for Monday Night Football. He used to do the Red Sox a long time ago. But when you listen to McDonough, then you listen to Orsillo, they were very similar. Their voices were very similar. Their takes were very similar. But McDonough was a little bit more edgy, a little bit more sarcastic. And like I said, he had that wry sense of humor, whereas Orsillo was kind of plain and ordinary and straightforward. But they seemed to play the same shtick. They used some of the same techniques to express things. And Sean McDonough was quoted once in an interview saying that when he lost the job to Orsillo and then he listened to Orsillo, he thought it was a taped game from that he had done because they were so similar in a lot of ways. As Orsillo and Remy worked together over a long period of time, he stopped being so vanilla, and they started to become almost a comedy routine on the broadcast. They weren't homers where they were just screaming Red Sox propaganda, They were very straightforward and fair. They criticized the Red Sox when it was deserved. They praised them. Of course, they were slightly biased. And if there was a close call, they were more likely to root for the to be siding on the Red Sox side than the opponent. That's to be expected, even when you're being fair. So I don't blame any broadcaster for maybe leaning a little bit one way or the other. I think that's only natural. But they would joke around a lot, and they would the game would be going on, and they wouldn't even be talking about baseball. They wouldn't even be talking about the Red Sox, and they would be making themselves laugh during the broadcast over and over. And to some degree, that was nice. I kind of liked it. It brought a light to it. Baseball can be slow, monotonous, and boring. Right now, they have Steve Lyons on the broadcast, and to me, one of the problems that he has in doing the shows is I think he has an interesting personality. I think he can be funny, but he overanalyzes everything. And I think that's one thing that Jessica Mendoza does on ESPN is they overanalyze things. And a guy makes a catch in the outfield, and they break it down as if it was rocket science, like it's the formula for New Coke or something. And that I think drives me crazy. But the Red Sox went kind of the opposite way. They weren't talking about baseball almost at all, and they were joking and having fun most of the time. And I think the Red Sox wanted to move on from that because they let Osillo go, and it looks like maybe Remy might be on his way out in the next year or so. He's had some other issues up here as well, so who knows how they're trying to slowly extricate themselves from him, if they are. What do you think about broadcasts that do that, where there's a lot of joking, a lot of humor, or they have a lot of guests in the studio? How does that affect whether you like the game or not?
Guests are almost always worthless. You know, you're not going to be with them long enough to really get anything meaningful out of them. It depends on the guest. Yeah, we talking baseball guest, a political guest, an actor. I almost never want that, you know, an entertainer of some sort. But like, it depends on the guest. Some are good, some are bad. But generally, I don't find the banter back and forth. You know, if you and I were doing a game, we're telling a joke or whatever. As long as it gets somewhat relevant, it can't be an inside joke. No one's gonna get. You know, you mentioned the announcement of a routine play. That's what destroys me. You know, I don't need this guy, boys and girls. I get it. Corkball. Okay? Not every cap needs to be broken down by sports science. Okay? So I think that goes overboard at times. I think the problem today, and I sort of hinted at it earlier, is that they don't want any downtime. You know, someone has to be yakking for every second they're on the air. You know, and I don't know if that's the producers telling them, the boss is telling them that, or the announcers, color people themselves thinking they have to talk. But because they do, they say so many things that are just meaningless that I don't need to hear. You know, I don't mind a personal story. I don't mind it at all. You know, I think some of those are actually kind of funny. You know, you mentioned Michael Kay. When Paul O'Neill might tell a story of his playing days, those are interesting to me. You know, because maybe it's something you haven't heard before. You know, and I don't mind hearing those. I don't need to hear 30 of them a game, but I don't mind hearing those. I'm not against that at all. You know, for me, it's just like meaningless chatter where you can just tell they're trying to fill the air. You know, what's wrong with hearing the game? You're hearing the crowd a little bit. Hearing the crack of a bat, you know, something like that. There's nothing wrong with that. I think we've lost some of the romanticism of the game because everybody wants to yak. You know, I get it. I'm in the business. I understand that we have to talk, but I think sometimes they talk too much, and that's when mistakes are made because it's coming up forcefully rather than, you know, easily, smoothly. That's my only issue with that. Like I said, overall the quality, there are announcers I used to love. You know, Pat Summerall and John Madden would never miss a game, man. Pat Summerall had that nice voice, very calm, collective, told the game, and you never knew what Madden was going to do. But they're bananas. You know, the Sunday Night Football, Al Michaels is great. One of the best, if not the best of all time. I know some people dislike Chris Collinsworth, but I actually kind of like him, mainly because, and I know I've told you this before, I like announcers who aren't afraid to say what they think. Even if they're wrong. You know, I'll say it over and over again. As a baseball player, I hated Curt Schilling. But on Baseball Tonight, I thought he was great because he would say what was on his mind. He wasn't sugarcoating it. He didn't care about offending anybody, obviously, you know, for what happened to him. So, you know, I don't want someone like John Gruden who loves everybody. Everyone's great. John Gruden has never met and someone who's not an all-pro. I mean, really, everyone's great. Everyone's the whole thing. And that destroyed me. Because once again, from day one, it seemed like he was making sure he might, like, if he wanted to get back to the business of football, you know, back into coaching, and he didn't offend anybody. He didn't offend a player. He didn't offend a coach. He didn't offend a team. And once again, that's not your job. Your job is to let us know what you think. Be critical if it calls. I'm not saying be critical on purpose. You know, we have other announcers too who are just trying to, you know, they're looking to rip somebody apart, even if it's not there. And that I can't stand either. You know, I'm not looking, I don't need someone who's always negative, looking to be critical of somebody. But don't be afraid to. You know, I want honesty. I want your opinion. You know, if stuff like guys who I know are giving me their opinion, I will listen gladly. The guys who I know just aren't up to it, or, you know, a lot of these ex-athletes that are there, you know they're not putting the time in. You know, they're not showing up at the ballpark at, you know, 10 a.m. for a night game to talk to all the players, get their inside information. They're showing up at 4 or 5. You know, they just watch a little bit of batting practice and then call the game. That's just not helping me, Chris. It's just not helping me. You know, I want the guys who are preparing, who are, you know, lifers, who are taking it as a full-time job. You know, getting there early, getting that information that we need to know. Those are the guys I respect. The guys who are just, you know, mailing it in, you know, the exes who just don't care, or the guys who are just, you know, oh, I'm going to make everybody happy and never say a negative word about anybody. I understand it's nice if we can do that, but that's just not the job you're in.
Yeah, I agree with you about Chris Collinsworth. I think he does a really good job. I think he's fair, balanced. I think he brings things to the broadcast. He points out things that maybe you don't know. He brings his experience without hitting you over the head with it. I also agree with Gruden. I can't stand him. Maybe we're too much alike. Maybe what makes podcasts interesting and what makes broadcasting in general interesting is tension and disagreement. And we seem to agree on a lot of things. And I agree totally. I cannot stand when people ask us. It's one of the things that really bothers me about the MLB Network. I watch MLB Network all day long, off and on all day. I tape some of the shows. But there's too much brown nosing on that show by too many of the guests. I think Harold Reynolds pulls it off pretty well. I think he, at times, is somewhat critical, but at times he leans a little too complimentary. Now, does Harold Reynolds know what he's talking about? I think more often than not, he probably doesn't. I'll be honest. One of the criticisms is that he has no clue what he's talking about, and he doesn't bring any analytical analysis to anything. No stats, no advanced metrics, nothing. So a lot of his opinions, I think, are just outright wrong, but I think the way he packages things isn't bad. But you look at a lot of the guests that – Dan Plesac, my goodness. He's never met a player that wasn't a superstar. He's as bad as Gruden, only it's less crazy. I mean, Gruden is a wacko. The way he comes across, it's like he's just a psycho. Dan Plesac is more clean-shaven, I'll put it. But he loves everybody. Everybody's a superstar. Everybody's going to figure it out. It's like, no, everybody isn't going to figure it out. There are some guys that are declining right now that aren't going to figure it out. Their careers are over, or they stink until they make a drastic change. So no, Dan, they're not superstars that are going to be great. They're a couple weeks away. And there's just too many. There's too many middle relievers on MLB Network. Let me just say it right out. How you end up with 7 middle relievers? They've had more middle relievers than any other position on their broadcast since the start of the network. Why they decided middle relievers would make great MLB broadcasters, I don't know. But someone somewhere is advocating for them and getting all these middle relievers on their shows. And there's way too much positivity. I hate when people are overly always negative. But I hate even more when people are just overly insanely positive, like you said. And there are too many people out there that do that. And I agree with you 175% on there. But I don't think that's necessarily the case. Again, I like Michael Kay, and you mentioned Paul O'Neill as well. I think that's a really good broadcast. When I drive through New York, I don't want to listen to the Mad Dog, though I like him on MLB Network, by the way. I do like him. I don't want to listen to Francesa, even though he may bring some interesting stuff to the shows sometimes. I like Michael Kay. I like the guy who tells it to me straight, who seems to be reasonable, who goes both ways, critical but also complimentary. I don't know if Michael Kay is a great broadcaster according to Yankees fans or Mets fans, but to me – I like Michael Kay quite a bit. So whenever I drive through New York City, I'm always asking you, what station is he on? Because I always forget. I that's the kind of person that I'm looking for, but from broadcasters. We're talking a little bit about general baseball stuff here. I'm your host, Chris Mitchell. With me today is George Kurtz, the New Yorker. He also writes for rotoexperts.com. If you want to follow him on Twitter, at George Kurtz, you can follow me at CJMitch73. Let's just wrap up a couple of these topics real quick, George. I talked about Mike Trout and how in fantasy sports, trading a superstar for younger players to move your organization forward, that's common in fantasy sports. But now they're talking about it in Major League Baseball. And as I mentioned in the intro, usually when a star is traded, there's some kind of financial reason behind it. A player has too much money on his contract, or he's about to become a free agent. There's usually something business-related that forces one organization to have to part with a star player. There's no reason for that with the Angels. Their owner has been unwilling to spend as much as he could recently, so he's trying to put some kind of budgetary restraints on that team. But nonetheless, he's rich. He can't spend as much money as he wants to if he decides to. So there's no demand that the Angels get rid of payroll for any other reason other than by choice. So the Angels, if they want to, they can ship Trout out, but they've got him for at least until 2020, if not longer. I think the number 2020 that was thrown out in this discussion is based on opt-outs rather than actual the finalization of the contract. I think I could be wrong about that. But either way, he's going to be there till 2020 at the very minimum. So for them to trade him in order to get youth back, that happens, but not usually for a guy who's not in decline, who's not even close to his decline, there's not financial restraints, or he's not near the end of a contract. So if the Angels decide they want to trade Trout, it's purely because they want to trade a dollar of Mike Trout with the hope of getting $3 back. And on the whole, they add more pieces and they end up being better as an organization when everything falls into play. What's your thoughts on doing that? And if you're the Angels, do you believe they should trade Mike Trout? Again, you got to assume they get a good package back. If you're trading CeCe Sabathia for Matt LaPorta, which is a bust, those kinds of things happen all the time, and that's the argument that I've been hearing about this, is that when you trade a superstar for prospects or young players, usually that's a bust. Well, I haven't heard anyone talk about how Mark Teixeira single-handedly built the Braves when they traded him, single-handedly built the Rangers, when the Rangers traded Teixeira to the Braves. That single-handedly basically built the Rangers for a long period of time. There are some other examples, maybe not a lot of them, but there are some examples of that. What's your thoughts on the Angels and whether they should trade Trout?
I mean, listen, I get it. The Angels are struggling, having problems. I mean, they have a lot of problems. But can you really trade what may be the best or second best player in the game? And as you said, how can you assure yourselves of getting good enough players? I mean, I think this is hypothetical. I've heard nothing about this, so don't take anything the wrong way. But let's say the Mets and the Angels are talking about Mike Trout. Now, what kind of package do the Angels want? I mean, does it have to start with Conforto? Right? I think it would have to start with Conforto. They're probably going to want one of those starting pitchers, you know, so pick anyone you want. Let's say Matt Harvey, because of all the, I guess, some of the problems he's had with the Mets. So you're talking Harvey, Conforto, and you're still talking minor leaguers, right? Dominic Smith, you know, top hitting first baseman down there. I mean, would the Mets do that? Are you giving up a guy who eventually, and they're struggling somewhat this year, but we all think he's a top 10 pitcher in baseball. Conforto, who, granted, it's a small sample size, but looks to be a really good major league hitter. Lord knows I'm high on him. And Dominic Smith, well, who may be your top prospect. And is that enough? Yeah, you know, I see both teams declining this. You know, so that's just crazy about trying to trade Mike Trout. I don't think it'll ever happen, mind you. But if it does happen, I think it'll be an off-season trade. I don't think it'll ever happen in season. Just too much stuff going on, you know, to work out that deal. I just feel the Angels, can you really deal a player this great? You know you're not going to get back one player that's even to them. So you need to get back at least two that match them, hence the Conforto and Harvey, and you're probably going to want something else just in case one of those two guys doesn't work out. That's why it's really difficult to imagine. You brought up Teixeira, but Teixeira was never Trout. You know, he just never was. And if the Mets were to make that, let's say this was going to be an in-season deal. If the Mets were to make the trade I mentioned, well, that's going to open up another hole, right? Now they have a pitcher. They're minus one starting pitcher. Sure, Trout could take over Conforto, but now they're down a starting pitcher. So does it help you or hurt you? You know, are you looking long-term or to win this year? Is it too hard to do both? You know, so that's why I think a deal is highly unlikely. Could it happen? Of course. You know, listen, Trout's from New Jersey. I'm sure he would love to go to the Mets or the Yankees for that matter. The Yankees would die. I can't see how the Yankees would even approach this. You know, I would judge out who would have to be involved, maybe Caprillion. But the Angels would want at least one, basically, like I said, a Conforto type, a guy who's already in the majors who looks like to be a very good player to a star player. The Yankees really don't have that. So the Yankees fans could calm down a little bit. Your best chance to get Trout is when he becomes that free agent. But I don't think he's really going to get traded, Chris. It's just too difficult for what you mentioned. And the Angels would be silly just to say, hey, we're going to trade him no matter what, and then not get a deal that helps you enough. I mean, it's just so difficult in today's baseball. We all love our prospects. Everyone knows the prospects. The fans know the prospects now. you know, because we have, you know, baseball reference, you have everything on Twitter and Facebook and all the social media. Everybody knows the prospects now. So they'll be able to judge that deal a lot more harshly. You know, I just don't see it being done. He's the face of that franchise in L.A. If you were to trade Trout, well, who's the face now? And really, who would be the face? Pujols is going to retire in a couple of years. He's not the same player. He can't be it. Would it have to be a player who he just traded for? You know, a Matt Harvey? So I don't see it happening, Chris. It's just way too difficult. I don't think the deal that I have to throw out there to the Mets and the Angels, I just see both teams declining it or both teams accepting it. You know, and I think when you have one of those things, there's just no easy solution here. I didn't think I'd live with them, and I would. If I'm the Angels, I'm keeping Trout, unless someone goes bananas. You know, if the Mets would offer that deal and throw in another top prospect, okay, maybe you have to. Because you know Harvey's really good. You think Carl Kiflin is going to be really good. You love Dominic Smith, and you love, I don't know, Dilson Herrera. You know, someone like that. Maybe. But I just don't see it happening. Not, at least not during the season.
See, I look at it from two perspectives. One is the major league level, and then one is the minor league level. Using your Mets example, if you're going to trade major leaguers for major leaguers, it has to be not only fair, it has to be lopsided for the Angels' benefit. Because they're losing the best player. So if they lose the best player, they have to definitely get more back in return. But obviously nobody, there really isn't anybody better than Trout. So they wouldn't. So one team gets the better player, but one gets more. So if you're going to use the Mets example, I think what you would need would be, because they don't have ace prospects, they have some good prospects, Dom Smith, as you mentioned, but they don't have Byron Buxton. They don't have Corey Seager, who's obviously now in the major leagues. They don't have Lucas Giolito, who the Nationals have in the minor league. The Mets don't have that kind of top five guy in their system, as far as I'm concerned anyway, those impact potential next stars. Now, if you want to look at maybe the Astros or maybe the Red Sox or some of those organizations who have some top-tier guys, or Julio Urias in Los Angeles, the Dodgers have some really nice prospects at the top tier of the rankings. If you wanted to get into those additions to the Conforto and Harvey, then all of a sudden that gets interesting. But since the Mets don't really have that, and most organizations don't. Most organizations don't have superstar prospects. I mean, they're rare, as we know. They're superstars because they're uncommon. If you're going to look at it from the major league perspective, I think what you need in return is Conforto, Harvey, and like a Steven Matz. Now, that's the question. That's a clear overpay by the Mets. The Angels are definitely getting more. But you look at it from the Mets perspective, moving Cespedes over to left field, putting Trout in center. Because they have so much pitching, maybe they can afford to lose two of their guys. Now, not even the Mets can probably afford to lose both of those guys, Harvey and Matz. But again, I think in order for that to be plausible and for the Angels to sell that as a doable transaction, they have to win without a doubt. And so, and then the Mets fans just have to be happy with losing, but they got the best player in the deal and maybe the best player in all of baseball, and they get him for the next 5 years. So would the Mets do that? Some teams, there are very few teams, but there are some teams that can afford that. Maybe the Mets could. Again, their minor league system with their pitching, I don't think anyone can sustain losing Matz and Harvey, but you've got Wheeler coming back soon. Let's say Wheeler gets back. Let's say Wheeler's back now. Or let's say Wheeler never got hurt at all. All of a sudden, dealing two really good pitchers like Harvey and Matz actually becomes affordable for the Mets. So then you add a really good hitter in Conforto. The Angels definitely win that trade as far as total, but they gave away a Hall of Famer. Could you imagine the Yankees trading away Mickey Mantle? That's what Trout is being compared to. Could you imagine the Nationals trading away Mike Trout trading away Bryce Harper for Conforto, Harvey, and Matz. Now, the Nationals don't need that, so from a need perspective, that doesn't make sense. But just let's say they did. Let's say Strasburg signed somewhere else, or Scherzer was to get injured, or something like that, and all of a sudden this trade makes sense. What would people say if Harper was traded for Matz, Harvey, and Conforto? That's interesting. That's, I think, what you need to do in order to allow that trade to happen. And to me, that's interesting from both sides. If the Mets don't cripple themselves by giving away three key pieces, then that's the kind of trade that I can have. And you don't see it. You don't see it because why would they do that? The Mets are fine as they are. They're right there in the race right now. They're in first place in the NL East. They have Harvey and Matz for a long term as well as Conforto. So why would the reason why the Angels would want to do it are the exact same persuasive arguments why the Mets wouldn't. But I could see how that trade could happen. But the Angels have to absolutely win it. Let me throw out the other scenario, and this is the risky one, but this is why I think this could happen but is very unlikely to, because it's very difficult. Imagine this discussion was going on 3 years ago, and the prospects being mentioned were Mookie Betts, Xander Bogaerts, Eduardo Rodriguez, and Christian Velasquez, the catcher for the Red Sox. Can't hit a lick, but he might be the best defensive catcher in baseball now. And I'm coming around to the idea that those defensive catchers that are this good are far more valuable than the offensive guys. That was not my mindset. It is now. Seeing Blake Swihart and Christian Vasquez play next to each other, I am now becoming a defensive catcher guy because it's amazing how much better the Red Sox are with the defensive guy than with Blake Swihart in there. It just kind of stuns me. And I've noticed that more at the end of about a year ago, and now that Vasquez is back again. But imagine that. If all of a sudden you saw the potential that eventually became Betts, Eduardo Rodriguez, Xander Bogaerts, and Christian Vasquez for Trout. But 2 or 3 years ago, when these guys were still prospects, they were still risky, they were still unknowns, but they were potentially stars. That's the other possible scenario. You got to pick the right four guys because, again, CeCe Sabathia from Matt LaPorter is a bust. But what if it was Betts, Bogaerts, Vasquez, and Eduardo Rodriguez for Mike Trout? And then they potentially become what they have now become. Is that a trade that the Angels should do? The Angels aren't winning now. They may not win for a couple more seasons. Imagine getting those four guys, the core of what the Red Sox youth movement is. Imagine if that was the Angels in 3 years rather than Mike Trout in 3 years. How do you like that idea? And is the risk always way too much? And is that why that deal just plain will never happen?
The risk is always way too much because you already have the second best player in the game, maybe the best player in the game. You know, you want to argue Trout and Harper, we can argue this all day. Either way, you have a fantastic player, a once-in-a-generation player, a Mickey Mantle, a little Willie Mays. You already have that, and you're going to trade it away. You know, every team wants a face of a franchise, someone you can sell. They have that. There's nobody else there to be that second guy. So it would have to be someone you're probably picking up in the trade, and it's hard to sell that person right away. So anyway, it's so difficult to do. I'm not saying the Eagles shouldn't look into it. You should always look into it. You know, it's what I say in fantasy. Everybody's tradable, depending on the offer. So Mike Trout is tradable. You know, absolutely. You should look. Maybe there is a team willing to give, you know, overpay massively. You know, and you absolutely take a look at that. You know, and the Red Sox, if you were another, Red Sox would be a match if they needed an outfield. They don't, because the Red Sox have the farm system to do it. You know, once again, if you're a Red Sox, are you really going to trade Betts and Bogaerts? Aren't those two guys better, not individually, but together better than Trout? I would argue yes, and they're only going to get better. So I can't do that deal. Plus, they want more. You know, the Angels would have to want more. You know, that's why these trades are so difficult to do. You know, I just I can't see it working. I just can't see it working where it's going to work for Trout. Assuming the Angels won. 100% on, you know, 100 cents on the dollar. They want at least even more. And you mentioned they probably want more, and you're probably right. But still, you're only going to get more if you take pure prospects. And really, I can't see where the Angels are going to take six prospects from a team and nobody who's major league ready, or nobody who they've seen in the major league to get a really an accurate read. I mean, how many times have we seen a top prospect just bomb? I think Byron Buxton right now. Byron, a top prospect right now can't hit the major leagues. Now, that's not saying he won't, but right now he can't. And the Angels can't take that chance. That's why they would need a Conforto. They would need a Mookie Betts. A someone they already know can do it. And is young, controllable for 4 or 5 years as far as the salary not getting out of hand. That's going to be important, too. So, like I said, I think it's going to be difficult. Not impossible, but difficult. But do I think the Angels should? Absolutely, but I think you always should. Not just because of what's happening. Now, you always should have an idea of what the market is for your players.
I mean, again, look at another example. There are a few teams I think would be intriguing, and then we'll wrap this up here. But imagine the Rangers, the way that Nomar Mazara has started out, the way that Roughneck Odor looks right now, the power potential of a Joey Gallo. Inside the division makes it even more difficult. But the Rangers are another team that could probably use a center fielder. Delino DeShields is hardly a dominating Major League Baseball right now in center. But imagine that. Imagine Mazara, Odor, and Gallo, even though really the Angels need pitching. But nonetheless, finding really good young pitching is extremely difficult. But imagine Mazara, Odor, and Gallo. That's a mix of young, somewhat proven, but not exactly established talent. that is an interesting combination there as well, if you're actually going to analyze things. But my question is this, and we are in a different world now with the media the way it is, the 24-hour news cycle, with the fancy world where we're used to trading players. I mean, the only trading that used to go on when Mickey Mantle and Ted Williams were on were baseball cards. So we're used to players interchanging from team to team and being traded. We're used to the process of trading because we're a fantasy world now, but we're also used to seeing free agents bounce around from team to team to team, and the allegiances aren't quite as strong. I mean, when the people, Brooklyn Dodger fans, used to hate San Francisco Giants, for example. So if a Brooklyn Dodger was going to became a San Francisco Giant, it's like the fans would still hate him because he was a Brooklyn Dodger. We don't have that anymore. We don't really even care that much if a player leaves. The fans get angry a little bit. Maybe they boo when the guy comes to town. But they say it's money, it's business, that's the way it is. It's a different world. But nonetheless, imagine this. Imagine the Red Sox trading Ted Williams. Imagine the Yankees trading Mickey Mantle. Or even Lou Gehrig, I guess you could say. Imagine that. Can you imagine what would happen if Mickey Mantle was traded in the middle of – at the beginning of his prime? Let's just say that, not the middle or the end. Imagine if he was traded at the beginning or middle of his prime. Could you imagine fans being okay with that? And again, we're a different fan base now. But can you even imagine that happening? Ted Williams not being a Red Sox, being traded for – even if it turns out to be three really good players. Just name three good players, even borderline Hall of Famers. Imagine Ted Williams being traded for them, or Mickey Mantle being traded for them, or Stan Musial being traded from the Cardinals to some other organization. Can you even imagine those trades happening? That's really not exactly the same. It's not an apples-for-apples comparison. But those seem impossible ideas of ever happening. So why would trading Mike Trout actually be plausible when trading Mickey Mantle is almost like blasphemy? If you were to say that they should have traded Mickey Mantle as a Yankee guy, you'd probably be kicked out of the club, right?
Well, you know, there's nothing wrong with discussing trades. I mean, when you bring up Ted Williams, you know, anybody who's a baseball historian knows that the Yankees and Red Sox actually talked about Ted Williams for Joe DiMaggio. Mainly because, well, Ted Williams, short porch in right field at Yankee Stadium, DiMaggio, green monster in Boston. It did make logical sense, but in the end, yeah, they didn't think he could really pull that trigger, probably because you talk about two immense icons in their own, in their own home teams. How could Ted Williams not be a Red Sox? How could DiMaggio not be a Yankee? But logically, it made sense to at least talk about it, consider it. But I think that's one of those deals where it was, although it was fair, two great Hall of Fame players. Yeah, I think both teams, just, you know what? We got our superstar. You know, no real reason to do that. You know, and I think that's what happened there. And, I mean, it's fun to talk about where Trout could go. But I think you brought up something also very interesting. The Angels need pitching. So all these players I talked about, you know, with the Mets, they probably need to go to an organization that's going to give them one, you know, a Matt Harvey type now, and then another good prospect along with whatever else they're going to get. You know, so maybe instead of that Conforto player, you know, they might need Matt Harvey and DeGrom. You know, something like that really to move Trout. Because they're pitching weak, and next year's free agent class, which Strasburg signed earlier in the week, is terrible. You know, Ollie Dickey is like a headliner next year. So if you're going to get better in pitching, it's going to have to be the trade route because you're not going to get there in free agency. You know, this all the trade they're going this year and in the offseason could be extremely interesting. You know, one team that I could see maybe, I don't want to say waiting in the weeds because it's the Dodgers, they're not really waiting in the weeds, but you know, could they be a play? Trout stayed in Southern California. They got Urias, not a headliner deal, but would they be willing to give up Corey Seager as well? You know, that's why they feel – I can go over this over and over and over again. I just can't see a team willing to give up, you know, one of their best young players on the field, Conforto, Betts, Mazzara, and their top two, three prospects, maybe more. You know, I can't see it happening, not right now.
Yeah, I mean, imagine Jock Peterson has his detractors, and the batting average is such an ugly number that people seem to be really down on him. His on-base percentage is really good. His defense is good. He still hits for power. Imagine Jock Peterson, Corey Seager, Julio Urias, and Jose De Leon, another hype prospect that doesn't quite get the hype of a Urias. That would be a monster package that the Dodgers could probably afford, could probably manage, and would love to have the headliner in Trout. That's a trade that seems to make sense, but even that, I can't see it happening. But that's another deal that could make sense. We got to let you go, George. One last question. Again, I held you for so long. I apologize. Real quickly, Steven Strasburg, 7 years, $175 million. He's a guy with Tommy John. That's the most money a Tommy John guy has ever received. I've heard stories, and again, it's anecdotal mostly. There's not a lot of evidence about Tommy John guys. A lot of guys are having it. Some guys have it and they never recover. Some guys come back as if they never had it. But there have been some comments that once you get to 6 or 7 years removed from Tommy John, you start having problems again, or may even need it again. There's been that speculation. There's not enough evidence to say that that's a fact, but there's been some talk about that. So you got to add this into the discussion on Strasburg. But a lot of people think he left a lot of money on the table. There's opt-outs in there, like everybody seems to get these days. So that's another part of it. But a Boris client signing before he hits the market and signing for what looks like under-market numbers, with Price getting 210, Strasburg being younger and arguably better, especially the last half a season. Steven Strasburg, 7175. What's your thoughts?
Well, as far as Strasburg, I 100% agree with you. He certainly took less money than he could have made. But I think this is a great thing. I think, obviously, Strasburg was the top Boris, hey, I want to stay in Washington and get the job done. And that's the agent's job. He just listens to the player. Because there's no doubt. I mentioned, you know, that wasn't a joke when I said, all right, I think he's one of the headliners. He is one of the headliners for free agent pitchers next year. That's how weak it is. There's no doubt in my mind. Strasburg goes to free agency, what's he going to bring home? 220, 240, quarter of a billion? None of them were worth shopping at all. Not in the least. You know, but hey, he wants to stay in Washington. He's happy there. You know, a contending team, doesn't want to move his family, doesn't want to move away from the area. I have no problem with it. You know, I think more players should do that. It's $175 million. He's never going to spend all that much. And let's keep in mind, he has two opt-outs after years, what, 3 and 4. So if he's not making enough money, so the team goes in a different direction, he can be a free agent again and make the money. So I think that I have no problem with Strasburg. I have no doubt he took less money. No doubt at all. Like I said, I think he would have cleaned up next year. And I think everybody would have been bidding on him, including the Yankees, for that man who needed a starter. But that's not what he wanted to do. He's happy, so he signs the contract. Good for everybody. Nationals keep their players. Strasburg gets his money. Maybe it's bad for Morris.
Yeah, I agree. The one thing I do wonder about, and again, I still think someone would have bid in giving him, like you said, maybe as much as $250 million. I do wonder about that Tommy John thing. We've seen some guys need it twice, and we've seen it after a few years. I do wonder about that. But the thing is, there's not enough evidence to scare everybody away. You know, if we were looking at 75% of Tommy John pitchers needing a second surgery within 8 years, if that was a fact, then we're talking about a very different thing. Because then you're talking about a guy who has to beat the odds. All of a sudden, that would definitely have an impact on the money. Or at the very least, there would be some kind of clause in the deal that would shrink it if Tommy John came around, like the Red Sox. The Red Sox thought John Lackey might need Tommy John surgery. So they said, if you miss a year because you need elbow-related surgery that makes you miss time, we get a year of your life at the major league minimum. That pissed off John Lackey to no end because it eventually came true. The Red Sox were right, very smart of them. If the contract had that, then Strasburg still would have got the big money and the team would have been covered for the risk. But I would wonder about that. What would the argument be? But the fact that there's a tiny market, somebody would have just said, screw it, I don't care. They gave Price 210, they gave Pujols 250 or whatever it was. So someone is always willing to throw aside the risks and just wing it. So I agree with you. I think he probably did. But that Tommy John thing would concern me. If you were going to sign him for 7 years, 250, that Tommy John thing would concern me if I was a team. But I don't think it would have scared everybody. I'm on board with you with that one. George Kurtz from RotoExperts.com as well as SiriusXM spent a lot of time with us. Thanks a lot, George. Good luck with the kids. Hopefully we'll talk sports with you again, but thanks for coming on today.
My pleasure. Enjoy the week, everybody.
All right, guys, that's George Kurtz putting in more time and effort than he ever should have to. That's my fault. I said earlier that I might be a jerk. Putting in a little bit of extra time, forcing George to stick with us, that's probably me being a jerk, and I apologize, but hopefully you guys out there listening, you women out there listening, appreciate it, and I'll take the hit for you. If I got to take the blame for being the jerk, hopefully you enjoyed the content nonetheless. And I definitely like having George on the program. So thanks again for him for coming on, putting in the yeoman's effort, putting in that extra time. Again, if you want to read his fantasy content, he writes about all the sports over at rotoexperts.com. And you can listen to him on Sirius XM Radio in New York on weekends, talks fantasy sports. But he knows his baseball stuff as well, obviously, as you can tell from today's program. We covered it all today. Daily Fantasy Sports, Jessica Mendoza, Mike Trout, Steven Strasburg, and there were some things we didn't get to. Hopefully we'll be able to get to that with other programs. I was hoping to talk about the White Sox hot start and the Raul Mondesi suspension. He was caught using PEDs, but he was able to prove that it was an accident, or at least prove enough that the people looking at the suspension agreed with him, that it was accidental rather than intentional. So they reduced the suspension from 80 games to 50. That was interesting to me. There's a lot of precedent. That is in the CBA. The people that are talking about online, I haven't heard them mentioning that, but that is a part of the CBA. Whereas if you can prove that it was an accidental inhalation rather than intentional, then the suspension can be reduced. I find that interesting. I also find that if it was accidental, then why is he suspended at all? I've seen this argument on Facebook and on social media a little bit as well. If someone slips you cocaine and you test positive, should you be arrested for drug use if you can prove that it was slipped to you by somebody else or even by accident? I mean, what if somehow it just slipped into your coffee? Oopsie. Should you be charged with a crime if you can prove that it was an accidental inhalation? I don't know. I guess you look at it. If you took a banned substance, the reason why these substances are banned is because they enhance performance. And I guess theoretically, the reason why you are suspended is because you not only did you break a rule, but you enhanced your performance illegally. So even if you took it accidentally, theoretically, you behaved or you performed at levels that you wouldn't have without using that substance, even though it was accidental. So you kind of cheated the other teams, even though there was no intent. So is that why you get the 50 games, even though it was a reduction? That's why you get 50 instead of 80. Is that the theory behind it? I mean, again, I don't know. Those are the issues that I was hoping to get into, but we don't have time to cover everything, and we didn't have time to get into those today. I'm hoping I'll be able to have a guest on, and we'll talk about these things at more detail, hopefully, in future podcasts as well. But thanks, everybody, for tuning in today. I'm your host, Chris Mitchell. This has been a podcast to be named later. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at CJMitch73. If you want to read any of my fantasy content, you can go over to rotoexperts.com. You can also go over to fantasydraft.com, where I write about daily fantasy hockey. If you want to read any of my content or follow the podcast, you can do that at minorleagueball.com. Or if you want to read some of my old articles, or as I said, I wrote an article about the situation in DFS, Daily Fantasy Sports, as we have it going on right now, you can go over to baseballamerica.com. Or you can follow us on Facebook, talk with us on Facebook. It's a podcast to be named later. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Hopefully you enjoyed the program. Hopefully you'll come back with us and listen in on future podcasts. Thanks, everybody, and be good.